himself, or teach young men to motivate themselves. These are the basic needs of man, and I like to put them on stair steps, starting with the lowest rung and then moving up for five steps to the highest rung of man's needs. The first, of course, is food, liquid, work, rest, recreation. Those things that are basic to man. All of us have them, all of us need them, and all of us know and understand that they are basic to our every need. So many of those are fulfilled with physical things, tangible things. The second and the next highest rung of the ladder is what I refer to as the safety and security needs. You'll never know how many young men join your program because you have a solid, sound program, well-founded, and there, for the first time maybe in their life, they can find safety and security. Safety in your leadership and direction, and security in numbers. You never know why a young man joins a program, but it is a motivating factor. The safety and the security of being a part. The third thing I refer to is affectional and belonging needs. Affectional needs. Every man, every woman, born on this earth, has a desire for affection. Desire to be loved and to be wanted. And a desire in return to love. Too many times in this life, we fail to show affection. Did you know that I never let a day go by that I don't tell those players that I love them? Not one day. Sometimes it's tough. Sometimes I say, you guys are driving me crazy, but I love you. Not one day that I'll ever go by because I believe it. You see, I really love them. And I know with all my heart that if you are properly motivated, if you're in the coaching profession for the reasons that you should be, you love those guys. If you didn't, you wouldn't be in it. So why in God's name don't you tell them you love them? It's not unmasculine to say, I love you. Look them in the eye. Say, man, I love you. I mean it. I love you. The greatest thing that I've ever had happen to me in 1973 when we were losing, a young guy walked up to me. He happened to be black. He was about 250 pounds. And it was after a loss, and I felt terrible. And he put his arms around me and nearly squeezed me in two. And he said, Coach Staff, I love you. Man, I tell you what, the loss, all of the heartaches and all of the tears somehow diminished. They didn't seem as important. Because one human being cared about me and said that he did. How long has it been since you told your wife you love her? Huh? Try it. Go home today, tell her you love her, and you walk in the door, she's liable to faint. Your own family, try it. I'm not kidding you. Your own family, try this on your children. Say, hey, come here, I want to talk to you. You little rascal, I sure do love you. They'll look at you. Hey, Daddy said he loved me. Yeah, he said he loved me. Great. You do, don't you? Then why don't you show it? Why don't you tell them? Love, affection, belonging. They're needs that are such a vital part of human existence. The fourth is ego or self-esteem needs. Self-confidence and appreciation. I'll say some more about self-confidence in a moment. But the appreciation part is most vital. That sort of comes and stems from a little bit of love, I suppose. Well, you don't really have to love somebody to show appreciation for them. Somebody does something, show it. I played for a guy in college. I love him and I respect him. But that guy never once showed me any appreciation for anything I did. I was all-conference tackle, all-conference linebacker. I was captain, student body president. And not one time did he ever say, hey, Grant, man, you're doing a great job. Senior year, last game of senior year, we just won the conference championship. He elected coach of the year. We walk into the dressing room. I'm standing there and all of a sudden I hear something behind me and wham. Hit me on the tail. I turned and looked. There's my coach. He winked, smiled, and walked away. I tell you, that's worth $1 million. You couldn't have given me anything that I'd appreciated anymore because he showed me some appreciation. There's no telling what I could have done if he'd done it 3 years early. It doesn't have to be gushy. It doesn't have to be all huggling and kissing and shoving, you know. But I'll tell you one thing. Appreciation is an important part of life. Show it. If you feel it, show it. You never know when some young man might be solely motivated to be self-motivated by your appreciation. What you think of him, how you respect him, and what you show in regard to him. Appreciation. The fifth and last and highest rung is self-fulfillment. Now this has got to be the most important because it deals with your self-development and the total becoming. Becoming of what you want to become. And nobody in the world knows what you want except you. That's why it's so ridiculous for us to say, well, we're going to motivate those guys to do something when you don't really know what they want out of life. In order to be self-motivated, you got to know what you want out of life. In order to motivate young men, teach them how to motivate themselves, they have got to express to you or show you in some way what fulfills them. Self-fulfillment is the highest rung of needs of man. Now, if we're going to, as coaches, be self-motivated, and we're going to try to self-motivate young people, there are some basic keys that I think are important. I want to list you a few things that we try to do. As I said, I'm no expert, but there's certain things that we believe in that we try to do that I believe help you, my coaches, me, and our players and your players to become self-motivated. First one is communication. I just don't believe you can get along in this life without communication. If you're on a coaching staff and you can't communicate with the other members of that coaching staff or your head coach, you're in trouble. If that head coach can't communicate with you or those players, then you're in trouble. Communication is more than just talking. Communication is eyeball-to-eyeball contact and listening, first of all. Oh, you say, well, I communicate with my players all the time. You hadn't communicated with them a lick. All you do is they come up and talk to you, and you're thinking about something else, and you're looking right past them. And they know it and understand it. You're not any more listening to them than man on the moon. How in the world can you be communicating with them? If you're going to communicate, you got to listen. You can't be thinking about what you're going to say next. You got to be listening to what he's saying so that you can understand. Another very important thing is the confidentiality of communication. My door is always open. If I'm in a staff meeting and one of our players needs to see me, I excuse the staff and player comes in and sits down. And we visit. He knows that he has that opportunity. He knows that he is open to come into my office and sit down or come to my home or pick up the phone at any time, day or night, and talk to me. And the confidentiality of his talk with me is most important. My coaches feel that way. I've solved so many problems in our coaching staff that you just wouldn't believe it because our coaches feel like they can communicate with them. One come in and say, hey, look, coach, looks like we're getting a little bit of problem started up here and think you need to know about it. It takes me 30 seconds to solve it. If I don't know about it, it's like a cancer that grows and grows and finally destroys. But the reason that I know about it is because of the communication, the confidentiality. Let me tell you something. I saw a coach one time try to be confidential with a player, and the player really responded to it. The player told him some things that deep were inside of it. And then about 2 weeks later, that coach took those things and turned them on him, trying to motivate him some way, and turned him on him in front of other players and coaches, and he lost him forever. It was all over. What comes to you in confidence should remain in confidence. And use that with that individual player. Communication. I mentioned a moment ago the bed check. One of the things that I require of our coaches is that when we walk off that football field, we don't talk football to our football players. Did you know that only about 5% of their thought, their effort, and their attitude go into football? The other 95% of it, they're involved in other things. Now, we talk it, think it, eat it, sleep it, and that's great. But every time you see one of those guys, if you reach up and feel of his biceps, say, what are you weighing, what are you bench pressing? He thinks all you are is a computer in there that has footballs in it. That's all. You don't understand or you don't think about him as a player, as a man, as having needs and desires. If you want to communicate, you better talk to that guy on a level where you can communicate with him. Not just talking football all the time. He has a lot of other interests. That bed check I was talking about. Different coach goes by every night. He goes by an hour early, and he goes by and visits. Sit down, he'll talk on the bed. They'll get out in the hall. One coach came in and said, listen, last night, coach, said about 20 minutes to 11, old Chris Carricker came out of his room, had his guitar, sat down on the floor, and he and I started singing. I looked up, and there are 35 football players crowded around sitting on the floor, and we're singing and having the best time. I said, I didn't know Chris Carricker could play like that. He really has a great voice. Do you know he's going to study music, coach? I said, yeah, I know that. Hey, Chris Carricker was more than just a football player. Chris Carricker is a human being with human needs and desires. And that coach and that player had a greater relationship than they'd ever had before. Why? Because of communication. If you want to be a self-motivator, you learn to communicate. Whatever it takes. Second thing, and I don't think you can live without, is a positive attitude and a positive approach to life. Oh, you can read Psycho-Cybernetics. You can read anything you want to read. There's so many books that deal with a positive approach to life, but it's got to come down to the nitty-gritty of you. Do you have a positive approach to life? It's hard to have it if you're around negative people all the time. And I want to tell you something. If you're a coach on a negative coaching staff, you got a negative head coach, get out. If he won't change, leave him. Don't ruin yourself by being around people that are negative, always thinking bad thoughts, always thinking, well, we're going to lose and nothing we can do. These guys are a bunch of dogs. There's no way they can win. That's negative. And you better set sail. You get out from under that, because if you're around negative people enough, you're going to become negative. You see, input turns into output. If you think negative thoughts, you're around people that say negative things, and pretty soon negative thoughts are going to be yours, and a negative attitude develops, and you're a goner. Whether it's in the coaching profession, whether it's in business, or whatever it might be, if you're negative, you're a goner. This world right now is too filled with too many people that are negative. You know, every time you pick up the newspaper, somebody's wanting to cut up our nation. Man, I tell you, I love that a while ago. Man, play that national anthem. Stand up tall. Be proud of this great country. I guarantee you, man, we have so many good things here. People all over this world would give anything to be here. People are trying to get into this country to have what we have. They talk about high prices. Heck yeah, we got high prices. But man, I tell you one thing. Everybody in this room is making more money than you made 10 years ago, a bunch more. And if you put it on the level of the cost and what you're making, then it's not like that. We want to read in the paper all the negative thoughts and negative ideas, and then pretty soon we become negative. We got a great country. We got a great system. I tell you, athletics. I tell you, when I read in the paper about the possibility of San Francisco dropping the athletics, I nearly had a heart attack. I'm not kidding you, man. I wanted to fly out here, do what I could. I wanted to give some money, do something. Don't let it go. Right now, the last bastion, the last spot in this nation where we can teach discipline, teach dedication, and teach a purpose and a cause is on the field of athletics. You stay with it. You're the heart and the soul of it. Don't give up. Don't go down without a fight. I guarantee you, if they take it, let it be over your bloody body. Don't give it up. Well, I didn't mean to get into that, but I mean it, man. I mean it. Let me give you a positive thought, and you take it and apply it to your own life. It's so great. I love it. It's very simple, and it goes like this. I am only one, but I am one. I can't do everything, but I can do something. That which I can do, I ought to do. And that which I ought to do, by God's grace, I shall do. Hey, there's nothing profound about that, but it is positive. After you first get past the first few words, I am only one. See, a lot of people stop there. I'm only one. Hey, I'm just one. I don't amount to anything. You know, what I say and what I do is not meaningful. I'm just one guy on a coaching staff. Every time I say something, it doesn't really seem to get across. This vastly overpopulated world in which we live, what in the world could I say or could I do that would be meaningful to anybody? Man, it just overcomes us. A lot of people in graveyards right now, that's as far as they got. Discovered, I'm only one, and they quit right there. Ended it. It overcame them. It was too powerful for them. But the positive and beautiful part is, yes, I am only one. But I am one, created in the image of God and given the ability to act and to think and to do. What I say and what I do is meaningful. I am important. If I have a job on a coaching staff, I have it because that coach thought it was important. He gave it to me, and I'm going to do the best I can to the best of my ability. I am one. I can't do everything, but I can do something. I can do something. I can't do everything. I don't have the talents that you have. Everybody in this room can do things that I can't do, but you know what? I don't care. It doesn't make any difference to me. If you have your talent, great. I'm going to take the talent that God's given me, and I'm going to use it to the fullest and develop it and go from there. When I was a little kid, I went to church. Man, I used to just sit there all moping, upset, mad. You know why? Because I love music. I'd give anything if I could sing or play a musical instrument. I have a hard time playing the radio. I'm not kidding you. It's terrible. I don't have any musical instrument. But I sit in church, and I just literally mope. I wasn't enjoying any worship experience. I just sit there because I couldn't sing. And then one day through athletics, I discovered, though I was slow and small, which is bad, that there was one thing I could do, and if I could do that consistently, I could play football for them. And that was to put my hat on. I broke my nose 8 times, but I'll tell you one thing. There's never been a tougher, harder-hitting, harder-nosed football player to ever come out of Snyder High School in Grand Theft. That's the only way I could make it. I couldn't outrun anybody, and I wasn't big enough to shove them around. So I dedicated myself to becoming the greatest hitter that ever walked out of that school. It's the only way I could make it. But it was a talent and ability that I had and developed. There are a lot of guys run faster. A lot of guys could do things that I couldn't do, lift more weights. But nobody could hit any better. So I took the talent and developed it. And I've applied that to my entire life. Sure, there are things you can do, but I don't worry about it. It doesn't make any difference. Take the things, the ability that you have, and develop them to the fullest. And you can be a successful and happy person. You can't do everything, but you can do something. And then the most important thing, and I think this is a challenge, that which I can do, I ought to do. You know, I really admire men that take a stand for what they believe in. And you guys in the coaching profession across this nation, you know, you have a purpose. You have an ideal behind what you're doing. You know, what you're doing is important to not only you, but to other people. You have the ability to teach, to coach, and to develop young people. Maybe nobody else can do that. Maybe somebody else could make more money. Maybe somebody else could do greater things in certain areas. But nobody has your exact talent. There's something I love. There's nobody in the whole human race with your kind of style and your kind of grace. There's nobody exactly like you. The challenge to do what you can with the talent and ability you have, and then to give the credit and the glory to God. I want to say something, man. I believe with all my heart that man's relationship to God is the most important human involvement. Hey, I'm not a preacher. I'm just a simple old football coach that's telling you that I believe that man's relationship to God is the most important thing in life. So whatever you do it by God's grace and give him the credit. We have a saying on our team, we don't care who gets the credit as long as the job gets done. And it's amazing what jobs get done as long as you don't worry about who's going to get the credit. It's heavy. That positive thought is yours. Take it, use it in your own individual life, but whatever you do, develop a positive attitude. The third thing is developing belief. You can walk away from this clinic, you can listen to the coaches from OU talk about the wishbone, and they have a great one. We played them. They have a great football team, but if you can go home and make application of that wishbone to what you're doing, then great. If you can believe in it, super. If you have two 260-pound guards that can come off that football and run the wishbone like they do, then do it if you can believe in it. But if not, don't take it home and try to sell it to your players or your coaching staff if you don't believe in it just because somebody else is doing it. Make application to what you are, and who you've got working with you. Then you can develop belief. Now, I'm going to tell you, you don't fool young people. You may come in and say, all right, man, we're going to do this right here. This is the thing. All of our coaches really believe in this. You're not going to fool them. If you don't believe in it, it's going to show up sooner or later. You better be solid in your beliefs and what you're doing. First of all, believe in yourself. Believe that you have the intelligence and the capability to understand your situation better than anybody else. Take all the information that you can gather, sift it down to a point where you can use it. Hey, now you've got self-confidence, you know, belief in yourself. Now let those young men have belief in themselves. It's not easy to get sometimes. Sometimes they come in, they've been banged around, beat around, they've never had a victory in their life, and you've got to develop a little belief in them. Let them learn to believe in others. Believe in them, they in turn can believe in you. They in turn can believe in their teammates, in their school, and the people around them, their community. Develop a belief in each other. And then, of course, I think the third facet of belief, most important, is a belief in God. Take a stand. I mentioned that just a moment ago. If you believe in God, take a stand. You see, man is made up of the mental, physical, and spiritual qualities of life. He's not just mental and physical. If he was, it's on a tripod and the thing would fall over. The spiritual part of life is just as important as any other. What we try to do at Baylor University is create an atmosphere where a guy can feel free to grow spiritually. If our coaches believe, they take a stand. If our players believe, they take a stand. Nothing's crammed down their throat. And through the FCA, we allow them to grow at their own development rate. But don't short sell the spiritual aspect of human life. Grow. Believe. We became known as the I Believe Kids at Baylor University this year. That was our slogan. It sort of came about because of a game with OU, and I'll tell you about it later. But we became the I Believe Kids, and a lot of people thought, well, we believed all along we were going to win a conference championship, not on your life. All we were believing was that we were going to have a winning season, some way, somehow, and we were going to play in a bowl game. When we attained that winning season, we reevaluated, went on to win the rest of our ball games and win a conference championship, but it was after reevaluation. We never believed from the outset that we were going to win a conference championship, but we did believe we were going to have a winning season. Develop belief. The fourth is teach individual worth. Individual worth, I said. If you're going to teach it, you have to believe in it yourself. In your staff meetings. You know, give that guy that hadn't had a chance to say a lot, give him a chance to say something, coach. You know, ask him a question. If he won't come out of his shell, put the B on his back. Give him a chance to say something. You might be surprised. That individual, what he can contribute if you believe in him. You gave him the position on the staff. Now have him a chance. Give him a chance to be himself and to show his individual worth. Same thing's true about those players. If you get in a staff meeting and you badmouth a player, you know, you say, oh, that old kid won't hit a lick at a snake. He's bad. He's just not going to help us. His attitude's not real good. Let's count him out. You've counted him out. He's out. That's it. If your attitude is that he's out, then it's all over. You haven't given him a chance, and there's no way he's going to survive unless he just overcomes a whole lot of you. Give him the benefit of the doubt. Believe in him as an individual. Try to find out what makes him tick, what his problems are, and help him solve them. Don't look for ways to destroy. Look for ways to build. That's what your job is, you know. That's why you have a staff meeting. That's why you talk about these guys. Stand up for one sometime. Find you one. Find some little bitty something in him that's good. You go in that staff meeting and stand up for him. And all of a sudden, you're going to see some people's attitude change because your attitude's changed. And then it's going to get back to that guy. Hey, listen, old coach stood up in there for you. He said, listen, there's some good qualities about you. He'll break his back. He'll do anything in the world to prove that you were right. Have a little belief in him as an individual. Amazing what can happen. Treat with respect all those around you if you want respect in return. That's the simplest statement I can make to you. If you want respect in return, treat others with respect and admiration. What you're doing is important. I had a coach walk up to me about a year or so ago at a clinic and said, listen, coach, I'd like to meet you. He said, I'm just a junior high coach, but I'd like... I said, wait a minute. I said, just a junior high coach? Let me tell you something, man. There's nobody in the coaching profession any more important than a junior high coach. I believe the most important man in the coaching profession today is the guy that works with those people in those formative years of junior high age. Don't ever say that you're only a junior high coach. You're the most important coach around. That's right. Believe in your worth. If you've got a job and you're doing it, then, man, it's important. Do it to the best of your ability. Nobody is just anything unless you think you're just. And if you think you're just, that's about all you'll be. Think highly of yourself. You have individual worth. Your job is important. Nobody is just. You're something. The fifth thing, I believe, is to show care and love. I've talked about love, and I believe it's important to show care. The only way that you're going to be able to show that is take a gut check yourself and find out if you really care. If you really care. Care about your family? You care about individuals playing on the football team, those other coaches around you? Do you really care? He mentioned something that a sports writer said about our program. I don't think a greater compliment could be paid to a coaching staff than to say they care. They really care. It's not something you can falsify. It's something that's very valid and very important. The sixth thing is success and confidence. I believe little successes lead to major successes. I go around on our football field and check our drills, and if I see a guy getting whipped time after time, I change the drill around so he can win. I want him to win. I don't want him to ever leave the football field on a workout day without a victory under his belt. How many times you brought that guy up off the B team, you put him up with the varsity? He's going against your best offensive guard, best tackle, and you double-team him, wipe him out time and time again. You pat that offensive guard and offensive tackle and tell him, man, that's a fantastic job. That poor kid over there hadn't won a battle all day long and won't. He'll leave the field that afternoon totally defeated. Oh, you're feeling like you've done a great job. The varsity's really improved there. But what about that guy? Let him win something. Find somebody he can whip. Get a drill so he can win. Little successes lead to big successes. You can't have big ones without little ones. Confidence. Self-confidence. Man, I tell you, that is almost nebulous. It's such a fine line between not having confidence and having confidence. When I first went to Baylor University, it was pretty bad. And they didn't have any confidence in themselves, the students, faculty, the people, just terrible, you know. No confidence. We were to play University of Georgia. They were eighth ranked in the nation, our opening game. We had to play them in Athens, Georgia, between the hedges. 113 degrees on the field. We go out for a warm-up. We're out there warming up. They time it just right so that our players can see them come on the field. I've never seen finer looking, stronger, bigger individuals in my life. Big red jerseys, and when they come out on the field, they walked out there, and man, they were doing their calisthenics, and it was awesome. People in the stands, about 60,000 of them yelling, screaming, dog meat, dog meat. They were the Bulldogs. It didn't help your confidence any, you know. You're sitting out there. You feel alone. Our guys, I could see their knees knocking. We finished our warm-up. We didn't take too long because it was so hot. I called them all together, and I said, okay, men, we're going to walk off this football field. We're going to walk right down to the University of Georgia and go right in the dressing room. I want you to look at them. I want your head held high, shoulders back, and try to get as tall as you can. Just get up high on your cleats. Now, walk right by and look at them. I don't want any mouthing. I don't want any talking. I just want you to look at them and walk in. We go down there, and old Georgia looked, and they thought we're crazy, you know. Here these guys walk in there. And when we start to come out, it's hot and everything. I said, okay, men, I don't want you running out there. We're going to save our energy. We're going to get after this bunch. I said, I want you to walk on the football field. They announced the Baylor football team. Here we come. They walked along. Stands all thought we're crazy, you know. Announcers up there said, this is the most unusual thing I've ever seen in college football. Usually they come out, blood in their eye, running out on the field, screaming, yelling. Here comes the Baylor Bears. They hadn't won a game in a jillion years, and here they are walking on the football field. But I thought it was crazy. We played like heck. Man, I tell you, we played good, and we left the field. We knew we were going to be a good football team, and the next week we'd play the University of Missouri in Missouri. We're ready to take the football field, ready to go out. One of the players walked up to me, one of the captains, said, hey, Coach Staff, can we walk on the field today? I said, well, sure. You know, I didn't care if it'd help them make a crawl out there. It didn't make any difference to me. They said, it made us feel good last week. I said, okay. Man, they walked out on that football field, and people up there in Missouri thought we're crazy. I tell you, when the score was 27-0 and the ball game was over and we won it, they didn't think it was crazy. Nationwide, hey, man, those Bears walk on the football field. We were around 50 high schools around Texas started walking on the football field. Confidence, really. That was the key. You know, they felt good about it. They had their head up high. They had their old chest out. They felt confident, and it carried over. Self-confidence is a key to success. The seventh thing is goals. And I mentioned this earlier, and now I want to come back and really emphasize goals. I believe in order to attain goals, you have to set ultimate goals in all areas of your life, not just in football. Financially, socially, spiritually, mentally, physically, in all areas of your life. Then you must set immediate goals, those you want to attain right now, then intermediate goals, and I believe it's important to write them down. Every player and every staff member comes into my office two times a year. They bring in a sheet that I have made up for them, a card actually, about 5 by 7 or 8. And on that is an area for them to fill out their goals that they want to attain. Two pages, front and back. They come in and I sit down and talk with them. I want to know. I want to know if one of my coaches wants to be a head coach. I can better help him. He wants to be a head coach. We talk about his goals. When a player comes in, we talk about their goals. This young man came into my office, left his goals. I thought they were great. About the next spring, I got a call from the dormitory, and he was tearing up the place, doing all kinds of bad things, terrible attitude. I called him into my office. Next day, he walked in. I reached into my file, pulled out his goal card, and handed it to him. I said, read me the top line. Ultimate goal. I want to be a head coach in the high school ranks in the state of Texas, and after my third year, win a state championship. I said, hey, that is really a very good goal. That's a high goal, and you're going to really have to work to attain it. Let me ask you a question. Knowing that goal and with your attitude and your conduct in the dormitory, how do you expect to ever attain that goal? Because you're not going to be at Baylor University. You're not going to be a member of this football team, or you're not even going to be in school here if your attitude and your conduct does not change. He said, well, Coach, I never thought about it. You know, we're just doing some. I said, think about it. Young man went back to the dormitory. And to this day, not one other problem has occurred. In fact, this year, when we won the championship, he was one of our captains. You see, he was able to see further than the end of his nose. To understand something else, but 90% of your discipline problems come because some guys say, well, I didn't think. Make them think. They got goals. They got 1973 season when we were 2-9. It was spring a year ago. He walked in, handed me his card. I looked at it, and I said, Aubrey, hey, you got a high goal here. Yes, sir, I sure do. I see where you want to be all Southwest Conference Center next year. He said, yes, sir, I sure do. I said, that's strange since you play guard. He said, yes, sir. He said, yes, sir, I know that, but I want to play center, and I thought if I put it on my goals that you would change me, move me. He said, hey, okay, sounds all right. I'll try that. We'll think about it. I looked down a little bit further. Another goal was, of all things, to be an All-American center. That's a higher goal. Then I looked at his third goal, and it was to help lead Baylor University to a conference championship. We hadn't been conference champions in 50 years. We didn't win a conference game in 1973, and he's going to lead us to a conference championship. Well, I didn't say anything to him, though I thought it was a little bit unrealistic. I didn't say anything to him, and I started talking to him about how he was going to attain these goals. First of all, I said, Aubrey, you're going to have to get bigger. You weigh 210 pounds. We start with OU next year. Their nose guard's 250 pounds, and it moves up to 290 pounds. Louis Kelser at SMU. They're all in between there, nothing any smaller. And you weigh 210 pounds. He said, I'll get bigger. I said, I'll do whatever it takes, Coach. I want to play. I want to win. I'll do whatever it takes. I said, we'll see. We put him on a program. I've never seen a guy work any harder. Yeah, he became our starting center at the end of spring. He was now from 210 pounds to 218 pounds. He gained. He's bigger. I said, call me in the middle of the summer. Aubrey, I want to know how you're doing. We put him on a program throughout the summer. He worked in a pizza place. He tried to eat all the pizza there. Just did everything he could to get his weight. He called me in the middle of summer. He said, Coach Taft, you won't believe it, but I weigh 221 pounds. I said, 3 pounds? That's great. That's advancement. Come on in bigger. He said, yes, sir. Came in the fall. He weighed 200 and about 23 pounds when we started two-a-days. He was fantastic. Never seen anybody work any harder, develop techniques any better. We played OU. After that ball game, they benched their nose guard. Moved another one in. He whipped him. Next week, we play Missouri. We lose the football game in the fourth quarter in both of those games, but he's playing great. Then we play Oklahoma State, the eighth-ranked team in the nation. They had a 280-pound nose guard. Harbor's now up to 229 pounds. He whipped him all over the field. We won the ball game by 17 points. From that time on, the rest of the season, we lost one other ball game and went on and won the conference championship, and Aubrey Schultz became the All-Southwest Conference center, unanimous. When the Football Writers of America put out their All-American, Aubrey Schultz was first-team All-American. And the most fantastic thing, after the Rice ball game, the last game of the season, I took him in and put him on the scales, and Aubrey Schultz weighed 245 pounds. A year ago, man, he was 210 pounds, second-team offensive guard. Today, he's an All-American, 245 pounds. Why? Because he had some goals. He knew where he wanted to go, and he was able to put the wheels to those goals. He worked, and he attained. Goals are an important part of anything you do. Now, the eighth thing is the mental approach, and let me briefly cover this. The mental approach has to be fantastically important, because if a young man is not right mentally, there's no way he can find his hot button, nor can you. And we attack the mental approach with a fervor. We go about it coolly and calculatedly. In staff meeting on Monday, we make up a game plan for our entire week on the mental approach that we want to take. We don't haphazardly do it or by somebody's feel or by somebody's action. We calculatedly think out the mental approach to each ball game each week. Each day of that week, we have a particular word or group of words that lead toward the game day and our theme for that week. For instance, against Oklahoma, you might think that, well, our theme would be to go up and whip old number one. Well, it wasn't. Our goal or our theme for that week was confidence, simple confidence. We knew if we were going to have a winning season, or we'd love to beat OU, and we went up to try, and we played the heck out of them through three quarters at 7-5, and they beat us in the fourth quarter. But we went to win, but if we did not win, we wanted to come away from that football game with some confidence. The preparation mentally of that week started out on Monday. Our key word was knowledge. There's no way that you can have confidence without knowledge. You got to know and understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, believe in what you're doing, and knowledge. Knowledge about the opponent, knowledge about your teammates, knowledge. We explain that. We talk about it. Each coach in his individual groups takes the key word and puts his own interpretation to it, and then at the end of the workout, I call them all together, and I put the capper on it, my own interpretation of that particular key word. The next day, the key word was commitment. There's no way that you can gain confidence or gain respectability or gain a championship without a commitment and a dedication to a cause. Commitment. Wednesday, the key word was conditioning. I guess there's nobody in the country works any harder on conditioning than we do. It pays off. From the beginning of the season to the end of the season, in 1974, we gained 8 pounds per man. 8 pounds per guy, from the front to the end. Conditioning, hard work, development, proper rest, proper nutrition. They knew and understood it. We emphasized it. Then, of course, on Thursday, the key word was simply believe. Believe in each other, yourself, God, all the things we've talked about, and believe something good's going to happen to you. You go out on the football field, and you're expecting something bad, then something bad is going to happen to you. We were a 43-point underdog to Oklahoma University. But you know what? We expected to win it. We went up there with the expectation and the belief that something good was going to happen to us, and something good did. We didn't win it. But we came away from that football game with respect nationally and confidence in ourselves. Now, the last thing that I want to mention to you that I think is a contributing factor to your developing self-motivation and for your teaching it to others is belief in the point and in the fact that you should never give up. A capacity to never give up, never quit. Now, that's easier said than done. But I want to tell you that all of you, at one time or another, are going to be laying flat on your back, looking up at the stars, and going to be wishing you could lay there and not have to get up and go on. That's the truth. Everybody. If you hadn't been there, you're going to be there, and maybe you'll be there again if you have. Flat on your back. Everything bad. Everything not going good. The tendency is to give up and quit, but never give up. Never quit. Get up off your tail end. Get up off your back. Put your face in the wind and move forward. Simple as that. Winston Churchill, who I think was one of the most dynamic, profound leaders of our time, after the Second World War, where his leadership not only pulled England through, but I think the free world, he was asked to speak to a group of young men graduating from a senior school that was his alma mater. He came to that graduation exercise, all 5'6" of him, rotund chest, barrel deep voice. He came there, and everyone there was the expectant of a great long speech detailing to these young men upon graduation a style of life and the way that they could be successful. His whole philosophy would be unveiled before them. The cameras were there, the newspaper people, and Winston Churchill came to that podium and he looked into the eyes of those young men, and his speech lasted 10 seconds. He said, "Never, never, never give up." And he turned and walked away. That's a heck of a talk. That's a heck of a philosophy. If you won't quit and you won't give up, it's hard as heck to get beat. Now, you may not win them all, but I guarantee you're not going to lose them all if you just won't quit, if you just won't give up. Neil Jeffrey, our starting quarterback this last year, became All Southwest Conference. In 1973, he was our quarterback and suffered through, as the coaches do, a miserable year. Your quarterback gets the credit or he gets the GOAT. And Neil Jeffrey was, of course, the GOAT because he was our quarterback. We tried very hard and we came from behind time and time again, but we just couldn't get over the hump in our homecoming game against TCU. We found ourselves behind with 11 minutes to go in the fourth quarter by a score of 34-7. Neil Jeffrey started throwing for touchdown after touchdown. With 1 minute left to go on the clock, the score was 34-28. We're on the six-yard line. It's third down. Neil Jeffrey comes to the sideline. I call a play. It's a pass play, a slant, 96 slant. The split receiver, if he's covered, I say, "Neil, throw it over the scoreboard. Possibly your tailback who's in the flare will be open." Neil Jeffrey goes out, executes the play. The split receiver is open. Not open. The tailback is open, and he dumps it. Instead of cutting outside, the tailback cut inside. He was knocked down. The clock's still running. We're on the six-yard line. And Neil got mixed up. He rushed up to the line of scrimmage, called a clock play, and everybody in the stands knew that he had just mixed up. And he threw the ball out of bounds to stop the clock. On fourth down, the ball game's over. A great cloud of defeat settled upon us. I've never had anything hurt me anymore, not only because of the loss, but because of that young man. He had played so beautifully. Had we won it, it would have been the greatest comeback in the annals of Southwest Conference play. But we lost it. We went into that dressing room, and you could cut it with a knife. Neil Jeffrey's sitting on the bench. The whole weight of the whole thing is on top of him. He feels he lost it. His head's down. I asked him to do one thing, and that's to get his head up and look me in the eye, because he had nothing to be ashamed of. And after that meeting in the dressing room, I called Neil to me, and I said, "Neil, let me talk to you a second." He said, "Yes, sir." I said, "I want to ask you a very important question. I want to know if you believe you're a winner, and if you believe you can lead us to victory." He said, "Coach, I want to ask you a question. What do you believe?" I said, "Neil, there's no question in my mind, but you're the greatest quarterback in the Southwest Conference, and you can lead us to victory, and you will lead us to victory." He said, "Coach, that's all I needed to hear." We went on, and Neil Jeffrey played good, but we didn't win another game for whatever reason. Then going into this season, we'd lost two games in a row, had a 9-game losing streak. Then all of a sudden, we start moving, and through our last 9 ball games, we win 8 of them. And Neil Jeffries, a contributing beautiful factor. In almost a like situation against the University of Texas, the score is 24-7 at halftime. We leave the field and go to into our tunnel to go up into our dressing room, and I'm last coming off the field, and I walk into the dressing to the tunnel area, moving up to the dressing room, and I see Neil Jeffries. He's on his knee. He's uttering a prayer. He stands and sees me, and I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I just asking God to help me to do the best I could with what I had." Big smile on his face. He said, "You know, I said the same prayer last year at the half of the TCU game." He said, "We fell short, and I was a miserable defeat." He said, "I'm saying the same thing now. Because God can use you, or you win or lose, in victory or defeat." I said, "That's great." Had a big smile on his face. We went in the dressing room. Air of total confidence. We come back out on the football field and take it. And Neil Jeffries throws for 351 yards, and we beat the University of Texas 34-24 and went on to win a conference championship. Would have been easy to stay down, to accept defeat, and to say, "Oh, bad things happened to me." But Neil Jeffries, not a loser. He's a winner. He stood on his own two legs with his face to the wind. He got up off the ground, and he fought for victory, and he won. Neil Jeffries is a self-motivator. Oh, I'd love to take the credit. I just can't. Neil Jeffries is a self-motivator. Why? Because he can communicate. Because he has an individual feeling that there is worth in human beings. He has a relationship, a belief in his fellow man, his teammates, and in God. And he just wouldn't quit. He wouldn't give up. And I say to you, whatever you do, wherever you go, in this profession or whatever you involve yourself in, be a self-motivator. Never give up and never quit.